The Vox Markets Podcast.
Welcome to Hot Stocks. It is Thursday, the 5th of October, 2023. Live, of course, on YouTube. If you're listening to this on the podcast, join us live and you can, join in the chat and stuff. Paul's here, full-time, investor, equity analyst in the markets. And I tell you what, these markets are wearing, Paul, especially if you're on it. Like you and I, who are constantly looking at the markets, so we can't switch it off. It's so, it does suck the energy out of you, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's basically a death by a thousand cuts, isn't it? And until we get a handle on the US 10-year Treasury, it's got to stabilize. I mean, it's just been zooming up. It's gone almost parabolic over the last 2 months, and that spooked so many people. And I think what investors need to bear in mind is that it's sucking a lot of liquidity out of the system, because not only are people actually, moving into dollar-denominated money market funds and into sort of, the longer duration, et cetera, because of the yields are so much, but also you've got that added problem, the other lead balloon on the market, which is QT out in the States. And what's happening is that it's sucking dollars out of the whole system, which means that essentially it's taking money away from other asset classes. And this is what's really sort of like spooking a lot of people, because liquidity is coming out and multiples on the stocks are coming down, and it's becoming increasingly even harder for decent companies even to raise money. So that 10-year yield on the US Treasury has got to stabilize. And then, particularly in the small cap and micro cap, once it does that, and we start thinking about sort of interest rate cuts, maybe in the US and also hopefully earlier in the UK, then that'll be a good sort of like catalyst for all things small cap. So, how are you faring? I'm battered. I am.
Yeah. Do you know what? It is hard, but there's the chart there of the 10-year yield. If that was a stock price and you held that, you'd be loving it, wouldn't you? Look at that. Point 0.5 to 4.7. Wow.
Unfortunately, though, bond yields are inversely proportioned to bond prices. So what was amazing to me, I mean, I posted actually on the internet earlier in the week, if you looked at the last sort of like 26 months since the peak in the ultra long dollar bond market, when interest rates were sort of like almost at negative. If you were a reckless fixed income, sort of dollar denominated ultra long bond treasury owner 26 months ago, okay, you would have lost nearly 60% of the value of that bond holding. I mean, how can you be recklessly defensive? But if you were a bond holder, you were. And that's actually the major problem. While we had the banking crisis in March and April, and we've now got it even worse, there's more pain. So that could be also exacerbating the problem, because the banks who hold a lot of this sort of like unexploded ordnance on their balance sheet are now probably being forced to buy long bonds to cover those exposures. And we'll wait and see.
Sell them. What I'm saying, why is it, so obviously it's inversely proportional, of course, the share price, the prices of bonds are going down 10-year. So what's happening? Who is selling? I mean, of course, we've got lots of Chinese, Russians and Saudis are selling American bonds, but who else is selling long duration bonds there?
Start with the Fed first, because it's doing quantitative easing. and then you've got the US Treasury, who are issuing a shed load, because we had the standoff before, basically the government standoff, and now they're issuing an unbelievable trillions of dollars of new, issue. So those are the guys who are actually, selling masses. And then when it comes to actually, buyers, well, people are not getting ahead of that truck, they're basically saying, that marginal buyer, that's forcing the yield up, essentially, just classic sort of massive supply and sort of like contracting demand is pushing the yield up.
Yeah, and what's literally worrying, isn't it, is literally the debt, the country is going up. I think we saw that stat I read the other day. The UK government spent more on their interest payments in the last financial year than it did on education. And so you've got, bond yields going up, issuing more bonds, and then they have to issue more debt to pay that sort of the coverage on that. And look at this. This is an inverted yield. So we always look at this, a weekly sort of chart. And these red bars signify basically recessions. And whenever the yield, so it's the difference between 2 and 10 year, of course, 2 year yield should be less than the 10 year. But when it inverts and it goes the other way around, it dips below this zero line here. that's minus 0.2, tend to have a recession after that happens. Now, look where we are right now. Essentially, this is going back as far as 1989. It's never inverted this steeply, ever. And so that's a little bit of worry.
It's even worse now because it's actually re-inverting, as in like, you know, that inversion is reducing, and that's the classic sign of when a recession is actually occurring. And if you actually look at the stats, okay, when it comes to sort of like, you know, dollar, you know, requirements, etc., if you look at a big picture and say, okay, let's look at the US economy, how many dollars does it need to service its current account deficit every single year? It's now, because of the sort of like the fiscal irresponsibility of Congress, and they're carrying on, you know, paying for everything. It's now $2 trillion per year that they have to suck out of the system to be able to just service their ongoing, you know, current account deficit. I'll repeat that. The UK economy is only about 4 or 5 trillion. So it's an enormous amount.
I did a calculation once. How much is a trillion? If you had the equivalent in seconds, so £1 is like a second, or $1 a second, and you got to a trillion. So it's like 31,000 years, a second for one unit. A trillion is 31,000 years. That's how much a trillion is. But here we are. It's a nice little chart. That's the AIM-ALL share.
Yeah, I know.
Down. This is September. Look at this. September the 8th, 2021, 47% down now, just broke 700. And literally, look at that, steep. Out of the last one, yesterday, out of the last 10 sessions, 9 have been down. And this seems to me that it's almost the final flush, you know?
Yeah, you're the expert on this one, Mark, Justin. So is this capitulation? Have we reached?
Yes. I mean, do you know what? Look at that. This is called the Relative Strength Index. It doesn't get down to 20 very often. And literally, we are pretty much there nearly, you know? And so I wouldn't, you tend to have, a bounce and then a retest. So I think we're not far up. I genuinely think, this is very odd, maybe it's just me being deluded. I genuinely think that we will have a relief rally going into the last few months of the year, December, October, September, never good for the markets. November, December generally are. And I think we'll have a relief rally and then, inflation is coming down. It is. I mean, we're seeing now, businesses suffering. We're seeing unemployment go up. If you look at the PMI data on construction, it's scary. It is contracting. The real economy is contracting, and these effects will be felt for a long time. Even if they stop, or even if they're reduced by, 1% or 100 basis points, real world businesses will still be suffering from these higher costs, people tightening their belts. The lag is huge, but the market won't. Once you start seeing the banks saying, oh, listen, inflation is coming down, and the soundings are quite positive, the interest rates could come down, the market will rally, but the economy will still be tricky for lots of companies who have lots of debt, or they're consumer facing, and they're facing a consumer sort of cost of living crisis. So it's a difference in the market and the economy. I think the market could, it's pure speculation, but I think maybe a relief rally into the Sander rally there, and then a little rollover, and then a rally. So maybe the second quarter of 2024, and then we're bull market territory, and Paul, strap in.
No, I mean, I'm with you. I think it's only a matter of time. We've been massively sold off, and it's only a matter of time before the market then sees UK interest rates being cut. At the moment, it's being priced in for the second half of next year is the first time that the Bank of England is going to take interest rates down, okay? I think that'll actually happen in the first half rather than the second half. And I've got a sneaky suspicion it could be Q1. So if that is the case, just because, not because the economy is bullish, because I actually think it's rolling over damn sight faster than people think, actually.
Yeah.
You just got to look at sort of, consumer spend, credit card delinquencies, and the housing market, etc. So on that base, and there's an election, obviously. So on that basis, I actually think Andrew Bailey is going to cut probably round about March, April time next year. And if that's right, then I could see, like with you, I could actually see there being a late Santa rally, and if there isn't, it will be Q1 in the small caps, because they've just been battered. And that chart that you put on, which is brilliant, totally demonstrate we've not only had that death of 1,000 cuts, but we've now reached that capitulation phase, the final flush out phase. Have we got rid of all the final sellers?
Yeah. And look at this. I mean, if you want to know how it's affecting the real world economy, you know, I mean, these figures today, look at the construction PMI, you know, 49.9 they're expected to come in at. They come at 45. Now, this here, housing equity withdrawal, I'd never heard of that stat before, right? And basically, I thought, what does that mean? But you realize the knock-on of this, and look at the chart here. Basically, it measures the change in the total value of money borrowed against residential properties. People refinancing their house mortgages to spend on it, maybe. And that came in, look at that. It was meant to come in at minus 14.5 billion. It came in minus 23.2 billion. Now, the knock-on effect of people not releasing equity from their houses, not spending in the local economy, not doing up their houses, has a massive knock-on effect. And yet the construction figures show that. But it's scary. I mean, I think literally we'll see, you know, almost inflation really coming down with a plateau and then come down quickly. And I think the Bank of England will think, okay, listen, the economy is really suffering. And dual mandate of you know, employment and stable prices. When unemployment starts to tick up and it looks a bit scary, I think they'll start saying, okay, we need to ease back here because it's a little bit worrying as to what's happening, you know? So,
And then another example, I mean, a classic example of how sentiment is so poor, even when you get a company that frankly knocks the ball out of the park, and I'm talking this one of Supreme, okay, which does the sort of the vaping and batteries and lighting, but they're all affordable products, yeah. It put a trading statement out and upgraded its expectations by 13% in the year, and it jumped up. And now it's come all the way back down. And you just look at it and just think, that's absolutely, frankly, nuts. It's trading at, I don't know what it's trading at a ridiculously low valuation. It's sort of like, you know, 6 or 7 times PE. It's got cash on the balance sheet. And it's doing all the right things in terms of regulation with regard, you know, regards to underage, you know, trying to prevent underage vaping and also, you know, sort of like reducing the environmental footprint of it by, you know, putting these reusable. So it's doing absolutely everything. In fact, it's leading the market in it. It's upgraded expectations and the shares have got battered. I mean, that just shows you how dark the sentiment is. You know, it's and actually that's probably one of the reasons why the CEO, who already owns over half the company, basically loaded up again, because he just sees this is ridiculously undervalued. Yeah. And I can't disagree.
Yeah, when
you look at it. You know, yeah, I mean, what's his share? He's got 57% now.
Yeah.
You know, and he's just bought another 170,000 and I can't remember what the one at the top, he's bought a shed like, well, there you go. He's basically bought the close on nearly 400,000, 390,000 pounds worth. I mean, just shows you that how confident he is at a price of over £1.25 on average. Yeah. I mean, the guy, if you want to know a guy who knows what the business is doing and how it's leading the industry, he's the chap to speak to.
Yeah, probably, again, there's a lot of companies in, you know, areas where, you know, sentiment's been hit massively. Like leisure's another one. And I just think, you know, as soon as we get this, you know, this positive talk from the central banks that interest rates maybe now, and we've plateaued and they're coming down, I think they'll rally strongly because a lot of them will be oversold. I mean, look at that. Probably didn't help that Rishi Sunak has got a bit of a war on vapes, hasn't he, as well? But that's not the only thing they do, is it, Supreme? So it's, but they said they welcome.
Well, I mean, basically, even if he does ban disposable, you know, sort of vapes, which is absolutely not, I mean, it won't be a problem because essentially these guys are leading the industry and everybody will have to readjust. And they've already got a portfolio of the, you know, reusable vaping products. So, you know, anyway, all I'm saying is that it just, again, it shows you how undervalued that company is and also, you know, how dark the actual sentiment is. So, you know, just one of those things.
Two questions, both from two different Bens. So we got Ben says, 2-year bear market in mid and small caps. It's been painful experience. When will it end? Well, that's a $1 trillion question, isn't it? And
me and you think actually in the next 6 months has got a good chance, in the small and micro cap and mid caps because of that interest rate rolling over in the UK. And It's the idea. What you should do, actually, what I'm doing anyway, is upgrading your portfolio, as we've talked before, looking for stocks that are really top quality, going dead cheap, being prepared to hold them when they continue to go down in sentiment, which they will. But the problem is you can't buy too much of it because there's liquidity issues. You will not be able to pick. There's not actually that many sellers out there. So pick up what you want, hopefully over a period. Just accept they're probably going to go down over the next 3, 4, 5, 6 months, etc. And then when it turns, it'll turn really sharply and everybody will start trying to buy and the liquidity will have been still really low and you'll see a huge gain. So it's preparing the ground, it's upgrading your portfolio and taking advantage of the low liquidity at the moment into everything small cap. But you just got to have a bit of sort of like patience and prepared to be, you know, sort of wrong for the next 3 or 4 months. I know you have the, you know, you could put your technicals and try and time it perfectly, but you can't do that in many small caps because liquidity is too small. And if you want to put any decent number in, basically there just is no liquidity to try and time it that late when everybody else is stepping through the door.
Yeah, no, I mean, I can talk about technicals all day long, but you can time it. I mean, you know, better. I just think it's efficient allocation of capital looking at charts. Fundamental research straight away, beyond anything. Find stocks you like and put them on the watch list. If they are in a downtrend or even, you know, avoid downtrends. There's three things, isn't it? Downtrends is ranges, is uptrends. And you want to catch companies when they're starting an uptrend. And that doesn't happen overnight. You know, small caps can bounce on a technical bounce massively. And so it doesn't matter if you miss that so much, as long as you don't get the downtrend. So I don't want to sit there on a paper loss. It's been too painful the last 2 years. And that's why now I focus equally on, you know, technical. And then, of course, portfolio management after that, and thinking, how much do I expose myself to this? You know, what's the percentage? I mean, it depends on your risk tolerance, I suppose.
Yeah.
Ben also says on Supreme, he just says, it's a different Ben from other Ben. Isn't a 50% or more ownership a cause for concern? We've seen other stocks delisted without notice due to a controlling shareholder.
Well, you need 75% to get delisted. It's like to go through as on the AIM. That's just the AIM rules. Having a heavy ownership, yes, it'd be, you know, it's probably not something you particularly want, but it just demonstrates that the guy's already got a lot of money, you know, skin in the game, and it just sees incredible value upside. So I think you can look at it either way to a certain extent.
Yeah. So before getting into any companies, do you know what?
Yeah, I mean,
Ben just said he's worried about the American markets rolling over because they went into bear territory and they've come back out. I mean, this is the S&P 500, for example, and you can see straight away, you know, I mean, these are classic, you know, lower highs. You know, that's the high of the market ever in 22. It's happened again here, right? It's down to the 200-day moving average here. And you can see, you know, it came down here. And now it's happening again. I don't know where that'll get to. But, of course, if there's downward pressure in American markets, it does affect us. But to a certain extent, sometimes you can't look at everything. You've got to get to a stage where you think you've invested in a company which is a very good value. And like Paul says sometimes, if it goes the wrong way against you, you think, well, it's still a good business, still good value. As long as you haven't overexposed, I mean, just wait, you know, wait. Especially if it's paying a dividend. Just think, well, fine, I mean, paid to hold it, fine, you know.
I'm more concerned about the major indices in the States to a certain extent than I am in the small caps, because I don't think we've reached a capitulation phase yet over in the US. And I suspect if the Fed has to hold rates longer than the market's expecting, which is probably because of the economy being more resilient, then it's going to have more damage at the you know, the earnings level, because the borrowing costs are going to be higher for corporates. Plus, inflation is coming down faster in the US than it is elsewhere, so they won't be able to pass the pricing on, and wages are still going up in a tight labor market. So when you put all that through, I cannot see how, you know, you're going to get 12% EPS growth, which is baked into analyst forecasts for next year. With higher borrowing costs, the multiple is going to compress as well. So if I was going to choose which markets, I'd go to small cap or micro cap UK all every day rather than large, super, so-called Magnificent Seven type stocks out in the US.
I mean, look at the Russell 2000. It's not, you know, it hasn't really rallied. You know, it had that high back in September. It came down in a range there. And look at that. It's actually broken down. There's, you know, you could say high, got this range there, broke down, and that's broken down to this level here. So it's really struggling anyway. And that's, you know, that is not, like the S&P, like you said, and the NASDAQ are largely skewed to those massive stocks of Magnificent Seven. So it's not a real true reflection. And the rest of the S&P is not performing as well as that. So, anyway, stocks, Paul.
I had a guy on X who basically asked me to raise it on this call in terms of a factor with what's actually in their sort of like treasure trove of R&D. And actually, a good example came out this morning is that they're just going to be publishing a new sort of like drug poster on two potential early stage assets. One is the is another one on the Precision platform to do it's AVA3996, I think it is. And then there's another one as well on their Affirma platform, et cetera. And these could just be, you know, absolutely huge. The first one, for instance, is hopefully going to go into clinical trial at the back end of 2024, so just about sort of 12 months' time. And then the other one is, I don't know, but they're filing for basically to go into preclinical, so we'll wait and see on that one. These are just, again, two other assets above the AVA 6000 one, which is their lead candidate. And I think what's happening is that the investors are now starting to see a sort of like a glimmer under the hood of the you know, the engine of both of the Precision platform and the Affirma platform, and they're really sort of like throwing out lots of very promising, you know, candidates. And just to give people a perspective, I'm not sure what's the market cap on
a 348. I was looking at there.
Okay, so, yes, yeah. What, 348 is it? Okay, so
358.
Yeah, so 350 million. I mean, let's be clear about it. Just the AVA 6000 on its own, if it comes to market, the current sort of like addressable market for that type of drug is well over $1 billion each year. But actually, if this one actually proves a success, it will grow the market hugely, because the existing drug has got so much, you know, side effects, and this one won't have it, and it'll be at a higher price point. So just if that comes onto the, you know, is a success, it will be a multiple of the existing market cap, and it'll also obviously rubber stamp to the rest of the Precision platform, which will bring this other one, the ABA, you know, sort of 3996 or whatever it was, you know, to help that and get to market as well. So I think it's huge. You know, off air, I said to you, Justin, I think I'm more confident now about Avacta being a success with its Precision platform than I've ever been, because of the actual efficacy and the safety data is just top notch, really, really is. But obviously the science, well, let's wait and see what actually does happen. But I think investors are now starting to get a glimpse of, as I say, what's really in that that sort of like treasure chest of medical science, that they can just spin out a lot of these different assets. And I know a lot of flack has been come from people like Tom Winifred in terms of where they're going to get funding and all this sort of stuff. Well, frankly, if your medical science is absolutely brilliant and you're addressing multi-billion market cap markets, which is what they are, you just guarantee a big biopharma company is going to want to be desperate to get into this area, and will either buy them out or alternatively be a partner to help commercialize it. I just don't think the financing is going to be any issue whatsoever, as long as the medical development carries on the way it is, because it's going brilliantly at the moment.
Yeah, and so funding-wise, they have convertibles. They never had 26 million.
Yeah, the convertible will just be converted at about, it's just less than £1.19.
Okay, so maybe that's probably why at the moment the share price is struggling. It seems to hit this band and then gets sold into pretty much. And maybe that's why then it's converted there.
Yeah, so, yeah, okay, absolutely. Okay. Yeah, that's why the share count is going up. But I wouldn't, you know... This is spring loaded, because if once they actually, you know, get into that sort of the trial data and more information comes out, then people are going to start seeing this is just a slam dunk. So anyway, there's never, nothing is risk-free. Everybody knows that. But as I say, I am more confident of the Precision platform now than I have ever been. And that's coming also through in their RNSs, you know.
Yeah. So, Sean says, what will AIM look like in 2 years in terms of how many listed companies still exist, how many will leave like the NASDAQ, and will many new companies join, in your opinion? I have my opinion
here. Well, I'm still relatively optimistic. It's going to come down to sort of funding and liquidity, isn't it? And if we get interest rates coming down, there'll be more opportunities and it will draw capital into the sector. So I actually think, you know, the market is probably at a very, very sort of like, you know, cyclical low at the moment in terms of IPOs and, you know, that sort of stuff. But if you look at it, you know, what was the worst time for AIM, yeah, it was the bottom of the great financial crisis, and then it came back strongly. So I think, you know, it's not everybody sort of complains about it, but actually it's got some very good tax incentives for, you know, for investors. And also, you know, it is actually when it's working, a good form of capital for rapidly expanding businesses. So I'm not quite, in 2 years' time, I would say, I actually think there'll be more companies listed because I think the conditions will get better. Hopefully, yeah, There'll be a better quality as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, do you know what? That's exactly what I think. I mean, I think companies that delist now because they can't raise capital are not good businesses, and they don't need to be listed. They need to get off AIM because they're sucking the funds from decent companies. And so I think you're better off with a smaller pool of higher quality companies. Mm. And so the reputation of AIM goes up, which will attract better companies and better businesses than having loads of companies, some of them just digging dirt in Africa for 10 years, looking for sort of, stuff there, doing pre-drill results. So we found some good samples here. They've been doing that for years and years. Why are we still throwing money at that? There are plenty of good businesses out there, and they'll always get funding. A good business will always get funding. I genuinely believe that. And sometimes it's not possible to go to NASDAQ, you know. I think what's happening now, it's a natural cleansing cycle. You get the downturns. Like I said, you get massive IPOs at the top because there's easy money coming into the market. Anyone can raise money. People are buying, you know, ape NFTs for $1 million, for heaven's sake. That's how risk, you know, tolerant people were back then, just throwing money at anything. And then it's a classic. In fact, I think you shared a tweet actually about, bull top of the market and bottom of the market signs. And at the bottom market, you get a very few IPOs, top market, lots of IPOs, easy money. But it's in the cleansing, you know, some of these companies that fail and go by the wayside, fine. You know, they are the weak companies. They shouldn't be on AIM. They should be, some of them not even businesses, let's be honest.
The key for investors at the moment is to carry on sort of like, you know, upgrading, you know, one's portfolio when the opportunities are. And depending on how much money you want to put into the market. I mean, you talk about the technical side. Personally, because I'm putting a big chunk into capital, into shares, etc., the technicals, I will drive the technicals when there's very low liquidity in small stocks. So it's frankly, that charts don't work for me when it gets to really low liquidity. So it's one of those things. But anyway, let's just switching gears. Let's go into healthcare because there's a couple of stocks actually that you, I think, used to own or you may even still own, had a bit of news. First of all, Lung Life, for instance.
Lung Life. I've done, very illiquid, but it's an example of, I did wait for the chart to align up here because I knew it was massively oversold. But I said fundamental first and then technical. I just thought this is undervalued because they had cash pretty much, similar to their market cap. And the market they're addressing is huge, you know. And literally, look at their test. And in fact, yesterday on the webinar, I do a weekly webinar, the investment club there, and we looked at one of the members there. Said, have you read the peer-reviewed paper of their last trial? I said, do you know what? I haven't delved that much into it because I just read their RNS basically. He said, have a look at this. And we went through the peer review. I said, wow, that's amazing. It's even better results on early stage lung cancer than biopsies because they're circulating tumor cells and it's taken from blood, which are all around the body. And sometimes it doesn't pick up on biopsies. I said, how could a test with AI be better than actually doing a biopsy? So there's no worry about the pivotal test, which has been delayed. Just read the peer review paper. And like I said, a lot of those patients,
And it also works equally well for passive smokers as it does for active smokers, which is just brilliant. I mean, that shows you the sensitivity and the accuracy of it is just terrific. I mean, how many people die of passive smoking? Masses, absolutely masses.
The news for
Lung Life was just that they're obviously got this validation test they're doing, and they've got which they've completed, and they're just simulating all the data, and they put a drop dead date at the end of September to get the news out to publish it, but because of being delays of getting all the data from the actual testing sites and then unlocking it correctly to find all the protocols, it's just taking a bit longer. There's no difference in the investment case because as soon as you get it, then we're off to the races in terms of the commercialization of it. They've always said that they're going to need more money towards the back end of next year or mid to the back end of next year. As long as you've got that science right and it works, then you'll get the funding. So it doesn't make any difference in the investment case, but the shares obviously sold off because people thought it's negative, but actually all it is just pushing it to the right, but we'll get to where we want to get to.
Yeah, I mean, that's a previous, you know, presentation slide of theirs, 2.9 billion market. That was 950 pence per test. That's before they got the, around about 2000, yeah, to that, the actual, the amount. Well, how much is it, in fact? I'll look it up now. But they're looking at 3 million tests. I thought, what? Mm. So I just basically worked on, you know, I said, let's say 2000, around about 2030 it is, isn't it? The payers will pay. So you do that, that's 20 million revenue, 10,000 tests. They're looking at 3 million. I thought, well, even if you don't do anywhere near that, you know, 5% of that, 150,000 tests at 2,000, that's 300 million in revenue. Mm. That's 5% of the target market. Now, if you look at groundbreaking tests, that's huge upside potential. So they didn't even have to do anywhere near, you know, what they want to do or what tests they could do. And there's still massive upside potential. That's what I liked about it, you know. So, and yet, you know, the efficacy, it's amazing of the tests. You know,
I'll give you another crazy stat there as well, Justin. Yeah.
Yeah.
China, right, for smokers is about six times the size as the US, at least with lung cancer cases, at least six times, okay? Just give you a hypothetical, and I really haven't spoken to the company, so I'm just going to chuck this out, yeah? What about Lung Life, once it gets, you know, this success in the US, licensing out the technology to a partner in China, as Bellascura has done for its COPD, you know, sort of point of portable oxygen concentrators, to a partner in China. So Lung Life effectively get a royalty, I don't know, 10% of all the sales in China, which is six times the market.
And do you know what? It's funny, I just listened to a podcast just now, walking the dog, and they're saying that, you know, Rishi Sunak's announced that you know, anyone over 14 now will not be able to buy cigarettes because they're going to raise the price. Mm. And then one of the investment analysts on this is, I don't think, you know, the big tobacco companies are that care too much about the UK. It's a tiny market, you know, in China. That's the big market. They're still smoking. They love it, you know. Yeah. And so there's massive problems with lungs out there. And so, I mean, the chart was here, and at the time, it was literally coming down. And I thought, I didn't pull the trigger down here. I thought, I'm going to wait because the valuation's silly. And it got to, like, literally market cap, it was cash. And I thought, that's upside potential. So this is a 50-day moving average. It's crossed it a couple of times, but it didn't break new highs. So I got, you know, in here where it sort of broke these new highs. And it just shot up to here, and I still hold the same amount. And I'm just about 80-90% up on that. But I mean, but you know, I don't know anywhere near the potential. I know, you know, the road to commercial execution can be bumpy and long, but I just think
you sound like a central banker.
I know that from Polarian. I'm just saying, and someone did say it's all in the execution. They compared Polarian to this, completely different. You know, Polarian is more capital, you know, it's expensive, basically, upside. I mean, capital, you know, exhausted.
Yeah, because, I mean, an MRI machine is $1 million.
They have a lot of hardware that goes into those things and have to be hooked up. It's a lot more complex. Rolling out that needs more capital. And also, it's not a test. It's almost a definitive test for the biggest problem in the world. That's lung cancer. Like I said, it's a bigger killer than prostate, breast, and colorectal cancer altogether. Now, I don't know if you saw the chart of Oxford Biodynamics recently, but they came out with an amazing test, a PSE test, which boosts the PSA test, which people like me and you need, Paul, to go after the age of 50 for a prostate cancer test. But the PSA test, they try and put you off it because I've asked about it before, and they said it's only around about 55% accuracy. Now, their PSE test, I don't hold shares in this, boosts that from 55 to 95%, which is massive. And like, it's about, I think it's about 5 million people in America have PSA tests a year. So if they can, you know, push that out, it'd be huge. But that literally went from, you know, in a day, it went up by 160-odd%, and then it's gone up from literally 10 pence to 47 pence. I said, well, hang on a sec. Wait until we get some results on Lung Life, because that's, again, like I say, the lung cancer market, massive, huge. And if they can sort of solve or help solve that or detect, they're hoping to do, aren't they? 80% of cancers are late stage detected. It's too late then. You can't do a lot with it. All you can do is manage it. So they're hoping to get sort of switch that around and detect 80% of lung cancers early. And so that way you can deal with it and you can, you know, sorted out, basically. So yeah, well, but,
here's a question: how does your technicals indicate timing on that one, Justin?
Well, exactly. Sometimes there are. Well, you could say here. I mean, if you look at this chart, it's a huge, awful downtrend. You know, it's been going down for ever, and you've had many fake breaks. But when you get a company that releases news that is, you know, blockbuster news in a microcap, sometimes you can't. But even then, you could have. In the morning, if you've got a space, I mean, there, it's starting to break the 50-day moving average, all right? And then it breaks up there. But I know one of the guys in the club actually bought in the morning. He didn't got, obviously, it wasn't a well-followed stock. And he bought in the morning, and he bought around about here. And so he was, I think he bought 20 pence he bought. And so it shot up to like 50 pence. So, but yeah, there are obviously exceptions to every rule. But when you get sort of blockbuster news that comes out of that, but that's why you should do research beforehand, because... You know, you can't.
If we have a vaccine day again in AIM or micro caps, yeah, on the back of lower interest rates, which I think we will have, yeah, on low liquidity, we will get a similar sort of chart, but not quite as severe on the whole market. And if you're not, if you're trying to time it, as long as you're happy that you're going to miss that vaccine day moment, then that's fine.
Yeah. Well, I don't think it'll be that aggressive, though. I mean, and if it is. It doesn't matter. You can't just say, you're gonna, you know, if you miss out on one day, that's it. You know, you've got to be more long-term than that. Paul, you're a long-term investor. You've got to be more long-term than that.
That's why.
I mean, there is a stat about best and worst days. You miss the worst day or the best day and all that stuff. I know, but I think I do hold. I mean, I'm largely invested. I'm two-thirds invested and 30% cash. And I've been there for a while now. Mm-hmm. And I've never been this disciplined holding cash. In the bull market, I couldn't invest enough. I was looking to borrow money. Now I'm holding 30% cash for around about that level for a long time. I've been in that, but I mean, around about that level for a while now, you know?
Mm. No, I mean, the reason why I mentioned it is just because I actually think charts work better for big, massive caps where the liquidity is deep and essentially you don't get these sharp moves. But when you get small micro caps, it all depends on how much money you want to put into it, how much you want to invest. If you're investing just a couple of £1,000, you can easily deploy it. It's not a problem in just about any stock.
Yeah, yeah.
But when you get into reasonably sized six-figure numbers, even anything less than 100 million at the moment is tough as hell to put it in.
Mm. Well, I'll give you an example. Desi Pharma, you know, I love their two late-stage phase three products. One was partnered, but they've been the partnership deal. You know, they rose on the partnership expectation, and they did a big discounted fundraise because that was part of the deal. And so I thought, okay, I'll wait. And I wasn't in there. And I thought, I'll wait for a dip a bit because they've got cash now. What's the worry? They've got a deal on one asset. They've got another deal on another asset coming up. So I bought in after a bit of churn. I thought it's going to churn a bit now with the placing. People just, you know, flipping the stock. And I bought around right here. And I just waited. And I waited. And if you look at it, that's in a really messy chart. And what I could have done, again, breaking 50-day moving average previous highs, you could have just got in here. But having said that, it probably would have been, like I said, I probably wouldn't have been able to deploy as much cash at this level. But, you know, this level where it broke new highs is essentially, it's money flow. It's money supply. It's supply and demand of the stock. You know, when you start reaching, new highs, that's basically people paying more for stock, less sellers around. And so it's a measure of money flow. That's all charts is, you know, so... No.
Okay, right. Anyway. Get up a chart of Alico. Yeah, you know I own it, okay?
Yeah. Elko, yeah.
Okay. Nice. Right. Tell me when on the charts, you'd buy that.
Right. So you're breaking the 50-day moving average here. Okay, it needs to break new highs. So you'd say last highs was around about sort of this level here. I'd say, you know, 72, 78 pence. So around about here, it's breaking 200 moving average as well. Now, what you've got here is, this is good look. So you've got higher lows happening. So people are paying up for the stock, but it's hitting some resistance here. So there's obviously some supply coming in around about this level that's keeping it down. But sooner or later, that'll pop. I mean, that's, you can see, even if I take the 50-day moving average off, right? Let's take that off. You can see pretty much here, if you just bought that uptrend, look at this. The share price is moving up. It hasn't touched that 200-day moving average for a long time, right? And then all of a sudden, it breaks down below. You think, what's going on here? And there's reason to be cautious here, because if it doesn't break back up here now and it doesn't make a new high somewhere, that's a little bit worrying. And the second high was way below that high there. And that's obviously a breakdown in trend. And so if you just got out there, breaking the 200-day moving average, and then got back in...
So the question is that a buy up? Is that a buy signal?
Yeah, I'd say that's... Let's be honest. It hasn't... Like I said... Like it did on the way up, didn't touch that 200 moving average. Now it hasn't touched it. Now look, it's broken above it, right? For the first time since what? October 21, and that's when it was coming down. And so you may have, I'm not going to say so straight up, but what I'm saying is you can pretty much say the downtrend has ended. Now, if you avoid a downtrend, that's one of the big worries. Just avoid a downtrend. If you can avoid that, and if you're convinced the downtrend has ended, that's a good sign, because then hopefully if you've done the research fundamentally and you're avoiding the downtrend, there's only two ways it can go. You know, and that's in, okay, in a range, well, for only, or uptrend.
Okay. The reason why I brought that up is because I'm going to give you a mark, yeah?
Hey, look at that.
About
look,
how good that is. I'm going to give you 10 out of 10.
Because
because fundamentally it's definitely getting better, okay?
Yeah.
And the reason why I can give you 10 out of 10 for your technical analysis there, okay, is because the house broker Cavendish has been contacting retail investors, basically trying to get some stock for a buyer who I don't know who it is on the actual market, who's in the sidelines. And then if they're coming down to people, idiots like me and other retail investors, then they are absolutely desperate. So that says there's a total deficit of sellers on the market. And some professional investor who wants to get into this stock, who hasn't yet got a position, is trying to trawl around, scribbing and scraping. So I'll give you 11 out of 10 there, Justin, because not only is your technicals hitting the fundamentals, but actually the technicals there is actually showing up what's actually happening in the background. There's low liquidity. Somebody, a big buyer, is looking to put some money to work, can't get it, and is contacting idiots like me.
yeah. But essentially, you don't have to be a genius at a chart to realize, you know, all you have to do is, in the bull market, it doesn't matter so much. You can avoid the technicals, you know, companies will keep you up. But in a bear market, it's really essentially you avoid those downtrends because, it's not a dip, it's a downtrend, and that can last for a long time. Like I said, this downtrend pretty much, you know, so, well, look at that. The previous bounces, you know, all these moving averages do is smooth out the price action. Okay, so literally, it's a bit of congestion there at what at 125, broke down, and then 125. But now you can see there, even now, it's tried to get above that 83 pence several times. It's now tentatively broken above it a little bit. So that's very good. And if it can continue, if it can stay above that, it's a new range. It's going up again. So I think. I know you want to sell now because you haven't sold.
Maybe I shouldn't dish you too quickly there, Justin, because you've just proved me wrong. So well done, mate.
No, but the thing is, if you look at anyone, in fact, we're talking about John Heumann, and he was talking about Jamie from Singersk, and he's saying it's all about money flow. That's all the chart is. It's money flow. It's a measure of money flow. It's about net supply and demand, and literally, it's like having a product. If you're selling something and you're selling well, and all of a sudden you've got no supply left and people want to buy it, it's what you do. Just put the price up. That's what you do. Yeah. Right? And then, after a while, if the price gets too high, then people will stop buying it.
And the other side of that, as in like the reverse of it, is exactly what we were talking about earlier with the US Treasury market. That's why bonds, you've got a huge amount of supply and a deficit of buyers.
Yeah.
So consequently, the price is going down and the yield is going up. Simple economics, as we talked about. Another share that you own that came out with news, or used to own, I think you've moved on now, is Verici. And basically, they had the same sort of thing. They came out with sort of interim results, and they just basically said that it's taking a bit longer for the adoption of their leading Tutivia test for kidney transplant test to be taken up by some of the transplant centers out in the States. Now, again, it's a bit like Lung Life. It's not really not a problem because they said for some time they've got a crash runway until mid next year. And as long as the science has proven itself, which it has already, and then they're going to get in some, they're going to start selling their second test as well, Clarava, by the end of the year. And I think they're doing the validation study on their third test as well. So as long as that all keeps ticking through, they're going to get more funding, no problems at all next year. Again, the market is sold, the shares are sold off, but really it doesn't change the investment case whatsoever. If you've got a couple of months, the key is going to be is how good the medical science is. And this is top-notch stuff. So it's going to be able to get funding next year as it always said, it's got that runway until the mid next year. It just, and it all comes down to how good the technology is, and the technology is top-notch. So people have just got to be patient with both Lung Life and Verici, that you get these occasional things shift to the right, but it isn't actually making any detrimental impact onto the investment case, because it all comes down to how good the medical. If they were saying there's a problem with the medical science, then I'd say, oh God, we've got a problem here. but there isn't. So, you know, it's going to happen. This is just total sort of like, you know, meat and two veg for what happens with, you know, standard practice with what happens with, you know, commercializing top-notch technology. Sometimes it takes a bit longer, or the studies take a bit longer and all this sort of stuff. You can't rush, you know, the best things in life, essentially.
Yeah, no, exactly. I don't hold them anymore. I do like them, though. It's just, like I said, I want to know more about funding, and it is delays, but that's it. And the thing is, at the moment, I literally, I'm being very careful of how many stocks I own, and I just want to, you know, have, I do believe we're not far away, and I've been saying this for a long time, but I do, and I just want to have enough firepower to either buy more of the stocks I own, or literally, you know, buy something I'm looking at the moment. So
makes perfect sense. How much cash do you hold, and how many stocks do you own?
So I have about 31% in cash, and stocks wise, I own here. My biggest holding is obviously my fund, which covers the boring 250 stocks. I got 20% in that. And I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 stocks. Yeah, one of them has actually come out. Truefin, I still own Truefin, which is it's a bit of a slow burner, but you know, they're dealing with a Lloyd's banking group, which is you're dealing with companies like that. You've got to walk to their timing. But they're just to explain, you know, one of the companies the Truefin own is Satago, which is invoice lending, and I think that's going to be quite big, you know, especially in the next 6 to 12 months anyway, because the economy is still going to suffer for a while. But you know, they started off loaning off their own book. And then, of course, they did a trial with Lloyds, and I said, okay, it's just, you know, a software company, we're loaning off our book. But Lloyds are migrating their loan book over to the Satago platform, and it's taken a bit longer than they thought, but it's going to happen in 2024, start of 2024, and the revenue really ticks up. And in fact, even like PlayStack, the gaming arm, is launching a raft of games. They're expected to do $35 million in revenue by 2026 and profitable. They've just sold off Virtus, which was sort of independent financial advisors business, which is a bit boring. I thought, sell that off. To me, Satago is the one. I think it's a, you know, software as a service business. We got Lloyd's, Sage, they got Challenger Bank to sign up to it now. And I think it's going to go gangbusters that. But yeah, I do like it. The thing is nice, they raise money, and there's the Virtus sell off now. So they've got enough cash to get to profitability in 2025. So it's only Satago now, not losing money. PlayStack will be EBITDA profitable, and an Oxygen as well. Yeah. So, but again, it's taking a bit longer than they thought. But that happens when you're dealing with massive companies like Lloyd's. You can't just say, come on, hurry up. You know,
the share price has been very stable, hasn't it? Which says everything.
If I paid attention more to charts, I would have gone up. I do like the fundamentals of this business. I just think what I'm looking for is, I do want small companies, but you know, globally scalable. And I think something like Satago is hugely scalable. And not only, you've got Lloyd's as a huge bank. I mean, there's banks around the world that will use this software. And like I said, it's come down from there, but
considering where we've been, the market's down 45%.
Oh yeah, this is the bear market.
It's been dead stable.
So, yeah, 60 pence between 18, and 19 and 60 pence has been going up. So yeah, but once that ticks up and breaks up new, I'll probably buy some more of it. But that's the kind of thing I want cash for, to buy more when it starts to move. You know, so I do like it.
Good.
I
mean, Another one on the medical side that came out with some some news is Bellascura, and they've got that innovative sort of like portable oxygen concentrator, but they've shown that innovation when it comes to raising money in a really tough market. That they've basically done a small placing at about 32p, I think. They did a convertible with a conversion price of about 40p. And then they've also proposed doing a merger, all share, with a company on the main market that has about £4.7 million of cash, which if you use the exchange rate, or effectively the share exchange rate on it, comes down to effectively cash injection of about 25p in the per share. So that's how they're sort of like sorting themselves out with funding to give them the runway. And they've taken on more you know, sort of have taken in, it's got more interest for their new sort of like Discover portable oxygen concentrator that's just been started to production out in the States this week. So they're all set now. They've got if that, as long as that deal happens, they've got the money. They'll be able to become cash flow positive and profitable, I think by Q2 of next year. So that should be the last fundraising that they need to do. And of course, they've got that big deal with Inomax out in China as well for $55 million of royalties over the sort of 10 years. And they could basically sell that to Discover portable oxygen concentrator hand over fist for the next few years, because it really is industry leading class. So they've been through the wars, as you can see on the chart, but mm-hmm. fundamentally wise, I think they're now there. I don't think they're going to have to raise any more money, and yeah. They're going to be able to hopefully then just execute against their plan.
Yeah, well, you can see that. I mean, do you know what? It's like, if you look at the AIM All Share, it's nowhere near the 200-day moving average. It's right below it. But you can see now, you know, if you're this is a red one, the 200-day moving average. You know, it's flirting with it here. Now, you know, you could probably say that's the bottom there, you know, high or low there. It'll probably have to go sideways for a while, but that's a good sign. It's you know, the downtrend has sort of ended there. And so, if you marry up the fundamentals with trying to figure out whether the downtrend has ended, your timing, your allocation of capital is a bit more efficient, that's all, you know. So, what's next, Paulie?
Yeah, I mean, another one, let's just quickly mention Saietta, which came out with some massive news on their on a big order from their Indian OEM electric vehicle manufacturer out in, as I say, out in Asia. And basically what that means is that not only they've got that sort of like a potential huge order, which has got their first sort of product platform they're going to be on, but there's also another one which they could work, it looks as though they're going to be on as well. And if you put that together, I think the house broker Canaccord have got a total sales value of $130 million just for that particular opportunity, just for those two platforms over the side of it. What it says to the industry is that they're now considered as a major tier one supplier of e-drive systems to electric vehicles in one of the hardest and most competitive markets in the world. So it just really elevates them across that whole, you know, sort of industry stack. And assuming they can execute it, you can guarantee they're going to get lots of people, big OEMs around the world, who are going to be knocking on their doors and asking them to do the same. So, you know, really good. And I could see them, they could, you know, do joint ventures as they've done in India, but they could also do royalties. I mean, you know, that's not, impossibility as well. You know, capital-like business model and just sell the IP. So they've got lots of different moving parts. The issue they have at the moment is that, unfortunately, they have a drop-dead time of 6 months to publish their FY23 results, and they've just got, there's a technical issue because they after the year end, they sorted out their ConMet opportunity in the US and just sort of parked it for the time being. It was because it was so late in the day, it seems as though it's caused BDO, their auditor, a few problems in terms of calculating goodwill and how much should be on their balance sheet associated with that particular contract. And so they've just unfortunately missed that drop dead date of the 30th of September. And hopefully in October, later this month, they'll be able to publish those results, and BDO will have done that. But that seems to be a technical issue, which the shares have, unfortunately, just under AIM rules, have had to be suspended. But the key is that the key is fundamentally they are now considered across the industry as being a leading tier one supplier of e-drives because of that flagship contract that they now have with their joint venture in India.
Yeah, you know, no, I do like Saietta. Like I said, I did have a dabble with them. I remember I was watching them for a long time because they came down, they're massively over someone from, you know, 280, and they literally came down, you know, literally, it's what, 20 pence.
Yeah.
And I was looking to break that, and I got in here, and I went on a holiday, so in Tenerife, I was in Siam Park, one of the biggest water parks in Europe, and it was shooting up, and I thought, wow. And I doubled my money here. And I was breaking down then. And that was where I sort of got out around about 50 pence because it just broke down. And even recently, I thought, what's going on with this? Why, there is some good news. And it couldn't get back into that sort of area about 50 pence. And it's broken down again. So that higher highs, it's broken down again. I thought, what's going on here? And so, yeah, so it just needs, I think, you know, I think longer term it's going to do very well. But it's just technically at the moment, it's not performing.
I had a question actually come through X again, and it was to do with Plarium, which is one of yours. Not, I know you don't own it anymore.
Oh, you want to see a bad chart?
No, I know. Yeah, but it wasn't about charts. It was about, well, it is actually relatively related, I suppose. And the question came in is, how long is the selling going to happen on this one? Because it seems as though there's a persistent seller. And when's that sort of like, the overhang going to be shifted?
Yeah.
And who's doing it, if you've got any idea.
I know. But the thing is, to a certain extent, it doesn't matter who's doing it, does it? Because you can't do anything about it. You can't just go on the house and say, stop selling. So if it is selling, you can see the chart is selling. It's constantly going down. I mean, broken several ranges. And so I don't know what's going on. But normally, when the sellers dry up, it's normally if you punch out some really good news, you know, the sellers tend to dry up. And the buyers tend to come in, and so you get net demand. But I don't know what's going on with it. It's been an awful chart. And it keeps, when you think it can't go down any further, it does go down further. Yeah. And so you think, just stay out of it, you know, until it starts breaking up here and starts making an uptrend. Because I don't know, it's awful. It's such huge, promising technology, and yet you know they literally reach bad news at the end of the bull market, which is not a good time to do it. So it dropped to that one.
Do you want
day.
A prediction here, Justin?
Yeah. Why?
Okay, and I've never owned a Polarian. Okay.
Yeah.
I think this could get an Oxford Biodynamics moment, and the reason is I think actually Philips will actually buy them. I've got a chance. If I had suffered all that sort of losses, which I haven't, obviously. I would not sell, because I actually think this is so... What's the market cap? I bet it's ridiculously low.
I think it's sub 20 now. So it's 17.6.
I mean, you know, Philips is a huge 10 billion, 20 billion, whatever it is, market cap business that has MRIs. And if this is what it is, you know, we all know it's been FDA approved and gone through all that regulatory stuff and the potential, etc. I mean, you know, this just smells as though it's going to have an Oxford Biodynamics moment at some point.
It could do. I mean, the technology is there. It's just at the moment they've got, you know, one thing leading to another. They said a knockback from the FDA, then they passed FDA, but obviously some selling going on there, and then they raised money because of the delay in that, and there's worry about the money situation now. So once you get that sort of vicious circle of they need funding, share price is going down, selling begets selling, and like I said, what they need is some knockout positive news that will dry up the sellers, will bring new buyers in, and then I think it'll start a rally. Because I mean, no one's in any doubt technology is very good. It's globally significant, and there's huge markets. It's just like, it's one of those things where I wouldn't be surprised if it just does 100% in a day or something and starts a motor, because it's so oversold.
No, nor would I. I'm with you. Another one in the sort of the MRI space, or it is increasingly becoming in the X-ray space, is Avingtraz, and they came out with results, full year results, to the end of May, I think it is, 2023. And this one has just been a perennial top-notch performer over the last 15 years, 20% per annum compound, growth. It's got that, obviously, the really rock-solid, high-visibility engineering business doing those sort of like, high-integrity storage boxes for Sellafield. It's got lots of, the pumps and services and aftermarket for, sort of the nuclear sector and the oil and gas. And it's also, does the blast-proof doors for the existing HS2 line. It doesn't need any more. It's got plenty of sort of blast proof doors from the booths off. So when you put all that, and I valued that business together, so the core business is worth well over 450p. Shares are what, £4 at the moment, something like that. And the reason why I say this is a sort of like a bog off stock is such that you get their medical division for free on the back of it. And this has got really top notch small form X-ray, 3D X-ray and MRI technology. The X-ray has already been approved out in the States for FDA for orthopedics. And they're hoping to do the same for MRI. And I could just see once that happens and they start making, and they're fully funded to do this. Once they start making sales in 18 months, I could see this has been a spin-off. Really is, somebody big will just come in there, one of the big scanners, maybe GE or Toshiba or Siemens or Philips or whatever it was will pick up that division. So you'll either get a trade sale or a spin-off. Either way, you're going to win if you're a shareholder. And who would want to bet against a management team that's increased the share price by over 20% per annum for the last 15 years?
Yeah. And do you know what? And there's literally, if your valuations of the company is good and your mind hanging around, you know, it does these trading ranges for a while and then it shot up, but then we had the cash for cash crash, which took out that trend. But then it soon reverted to trend, and now you've got this range for a while. So if you're doing research in the company, you can be in a range for a while. But if you're happy to have patience, knowing it's a good business, you can just pick up some stock there, can't you?
And they've got the biggest shareholder is Christopher Mills, who's probably the best and the most brilliant life science investor in the UK by a mile. So he's going to be funding this. So, you know, and he'll be guiding it how to do it. So, you know, what the hell? But it, all I was saying is it looks great. And if any stupid sort of like, you know, idiot sells a lot of chunk, there's lots of people who are going to be wanting to pick some stock off. This has got a flaw, this has. To me, if you bought these, there's a little downside, but plenty of potential upside. If you're willing to hold for 2, 3, 4, 5 years.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the track record's proved that, hasn't it? I mean, you look back, this is a weekly chart. So literally from, you know, they said 2000. And
that's brilliant,
2000,
isn't it?
Yeah. So 31 pence up to 380. There we are.
Yeah, I know. That's absolutely brilliant. I mean, another one which came out with results for half year was Venture Life, and they're bang in line with what expectations, cash generation, the net debt's coming down, like-for-like sales up set at 10%. And what was important, most of that heavy lifting has been done by volume, not price increases. There's more price increases coming through in the second half, and that's why they're so confident about hitting their numbers. Margins are also improving at the EBITDA level. The supply chain's easing in part, so, you know, basically raw material costs are coming down, so they're hopefully going to be improving gross margins as well, which will further lift, you know, EBITDA margins. I think they're currently about 18-19%, and the target to get them to about 25, and they're trading at a ridiculously low valuation. They're sort of like, you know, on sort of trough earnings, they're sort of, I think it's about 10 or 11 times, you know, PE, but their cash flow yield is double digits. It's about 15%. So if you look at it, this is a bit of a cash machine, this one. It just needs to reduce. Its number one objective, and when I interviewed the CEO, Jerry Randall, he told me number one objective is to keep that top line moving and to keep the debt coming down, those two. So, you know, and I think he's going to do it. And once you push the, they should be around about 1x EBITDA net debt by December, which is what, 3 months away. And then if you push it again for next year, I bet they're about half of that. So about 0.5, which means they've got, you know, lots and lots of balance sheet, sort of like, you know, capacity to do whatever they want to do. But that just says to me that's sold off, that as that just like,
it's quite nice. I mean, even that line there, you know, they couldn't break that. And then all of a sudden they broke it recently. So it could be a bottom here. I mean, they could start a bottom here. I mean, it takes a while to play out, but it could seem like a bottom there, previous support over that level. Cool. Yeah.
And then the other one which came out with half year results, which was again bang in line, is Fadel, which is FADL is the ticker. They are basically a category killer in software for royalties management and brand content protection. And they came on the market, I think it was about April earlier this year at 145. They've got their shares are not liquid at all because they've got this Reg S requirement that they can't allow. That gets cleared in April next year. And once you do that, then it allows all the brokers who haven't got, you know, things like Hargreaves Lansdown don't allow trading for UK investors in this because they haven't got the systems to be able to discriminate between US and UK citizens. But you can do it on AJ Bell and you can do it on Interactive Brokers as well.
That happened same with Long Life. That's part of the reason it sold off so much because basically it's a Reg S for a year and no one could buy any. And it came down. I thought this is my advantage. Then I went to buy it when Reg S came off to my own Barclays. please. And they said, no, we still don't do it because there's an ink. It's, I said, what? So I transferred the money to Hargreaves Lansdown. So that's to my advantage because I'm assuming, you know, the liquidity coming in was selling in the downturn. I thought, sooner or later, it's going to turn. And it did. So, sometimes that's the advantage. So keep an eye on Fidel because when that regex comes up,
absolutely, it will
rally. And
they're aiming to basically do about $14 million of turnover this year. And but the 5 years afterwards, they're hoping to get to like 50 million, and that will be just organic growth. And remember, this is high margin software sales. The sort of recurring revenues are about, I think it's 80-90% of total revenues. Their churn, they've only ever lost one customer who's come off over 20 years. So their churn is like negligible. It's all adding to the top line. And as I say, the key for this, it's niche software, but it's a big multi-billion pound market that becomes increasingly important as you get content which is segregated with subscriptions, and it's like Spotify and all these other, you get these authors and all this sort of stuff who want to be paid out royalties. So it's becoming increasingly important to large, big multinationals. They won people like Coca-Cola and Sanofi at the first half. Wow. So it just shows you the caliber of client that they service, really top-notch blue chip, and they'll stay there forever. There's nobody else. There's another game in town. People don't, the likes of SAP, the big enterprise, don't do this because it's really highly complex and very niche technology. And they're the only fish basically in this sort of like pond. So consequently, they're getting all that business. It isn't as though the guy, Tarek who runs it and founded it. He knows absolutely everything, all that there is with royalty management software. I mean, he's been doing it. He's been living and breathing it for 20 years. So you've got a really stable management team. They've just brought on, the IPO is to basically bring in new sales team and a bit more software development. So they're increasing the addressable market and also increasing their competitive advantage over really point solutions that they're the only one with an end-to-end product. Basically, I think this is ideal because they'll put on AI software. They'll have no more the competition won't be able to, afford it, etc. And they'll just carry on winning more and more market share of really high value stuff. And eventually, 5, 10, 15 years, if they ever decide, they'll sell just to a bigger player. It's all dropped through. I mean, the marginal cost of selling air is not very high, as we all know.
Ben says, the only thing that's done well in my portfolio is uranium. Geiger counter is now my biggest holding. Yeah, Geiger counter is obviously...
Yeah, well done on the old uranium. I mean, it's the nuclear play, isn't it?
Yeah, but from
40... to be perfectly honest, my portfolio... I mean, I've bought quite a few stocks this year, and just about every single one, all the new positions I've picked up have gone down. You've got to accept it. I went into the plays... to the investments with a 3 to 5 year time horizon, except that things go down regularly. My stocks go down big positions by 50-60%. I mean, just give you an indication, Kreschik did it, during the pandemic, it went down 50%. I lost a big number on it, and then it came out really well. Equals likewise went down not by 50%, but by 30%. And that's done really, really well. I've had many. And then the other one I've owned, a big position I've had over the years was Blanco. And, that one went, I lost 50-60% on that at one stage, more than that, 70-80%. And then it got taken out. So I think if you've got the fundamentals right, then you can actually live through the ups and the downs. And sometimes the downs can be pretty, pretty steep, but that's just part and parcel of small and micro cap investing. And once you get that flush out, the capitulation phase, that's when the game starts. That's when it's really interesting. you get payback. It can happen often.
Yeah, I know. Let's hope that that's happening because it's been a painful 2 years. So, this is generally, a year, 18 months is it's the length of a bear market. And now we've got, how many months? Is it, 758 days, So it's literally.
Oh, yeah, 26 months, isn't it, basically?
Yeah,
I know.
Look at that, so you can, to there, and you can see it's 758 days down 47%. That's a long time, you know, it's for a bear market. So just historically going back, if you look at, you know, the industry going back as long as you go back, that's quite long. So even on that measure, we do a bounce and a rally in the next couple of months.
Yeah. And one to just to put on the baby in the bathwater watch list. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a reasonable size AIM stock, okay, which has got quite a lot of liquidity. So I just want to raise it for investors. It's Learning Technology Group. Okay.
Okay.
So stick the chart on there. It still looks is in a downtrend to me.
What is it? LTG.
The LTG still looks a bit. Yeah. I think it's about a 500 million market cap business. So we're talking quite a lot of liquidity here.
Yeah.
There you go. 530 million. So, and there's plenty of shares traded each day. So, this isn't a difficult one to get into, right? And people would say that's a classic Head and Shoulders. What it does on the fundamentals, okay, it's probably a best in class digital corporate training and talent development platform. And it covers all bases, all the way, you know, from transformational. Sort of like, you know, employee re-engagement and, you know, moving them into AI and teaching and all this sort of stuff, all the way through to recruitment. And it does it from a platform basis, i.e. since it's got quite a lot of software. I was actually an investor with one of their companies they bought back in about 2016-17, Net Dimensions, and that was a high quality business, a lot in regulated areas where, you know, people always need to be trained and updated, things like, you know, mining and safety and mission critical stuff. But they also do this really big picture sort of, you know, enterprise-wise transformation. Not surprisingly, as the economy's come off, people have got worried that some of these the discretionary, you know, work is going to be actually moving to the right as corporates cut their, you know, cut their cloth. That's about 30% of the business. About 70% is high value recurring revenues. And they make overall, I think it's about 16-17% EBIT margin. So it's highly profitable, okay? And it's trading, and I can't remember how much it's trading on. Let me have a quick look at the system now, just as the price. At 67p, I've got a PE ratio for it of roughly around about 11 times. But it's an EV EBITDA of about 5 or 6 for this year, which historically is really cheap. And its cash flow yield is 6.5%, going up to next year about 12%. So it's frankly, when it comes to valuation and it's sort of like best in class on digital learning on the fundamental side, it looks like a potential opportunity. But when you look at it on the chart there, on the chart, you see that's still as sick as a parrot, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, actually, what you want is for a start to break the 50-day moving average, then break previous highs, which would have been sort of 89, 90 pence. Now it's gone down again, broken down again. And so you just need it to form a base somewhere because it's still in a bit of a downtrend.
Yeah.
And,
I mean, I'll give you an indication on valuation, okay? This is it trades about 5 or 6, well, about less than 5 times EBITDA for next year. Accenture, who do sort of corporate transformations and, you know, training and all this sort of stuff. They're on about 10 to 12 times EBITDA, okay? You could see them just buying this one straight out of it, you know, no problem. Yeah. So I don't own it. It's liquid. And all I would say, it does have good technology, you know, on board to leverage. And it does seem to have a bit of a platform. My only question is, you know, if we go through a really tough downturn, how much of that recurring revenue stream, the 70%, will still stay recurring and still stay there? And that's one question. The other question it comes down to is what the gross margins. They don't report gross margin because they're a people services business, and therefore they just do the EBIT margin. But given their EBIT margin is 15, 16, 17%, then it means that they've got that scalability. So I just wanted to put it out there because I think it's quite an interesting thing that people might want to have a look at as a heads up. But the chart doesn't look good, and you'd say, okay, one of the key things they need to do is reduce their debt. I think the debt is about 1.5 times EBITDA, but they are highly cash generative, so that should come down quite rapidly over the next 18 months.
Yeah. So, I mean, if I like a company fundamentally, the chart is looking at, I just put an alert on the chart. You know, I'll get an alert when it crosses 50-day moving average or breaks a new high. And it's quite easy to do that. But I mean, a company I like who's mid-cap.
Okay. Just before we move on that one, then, Justin, you do that. When you think that chart looks good, let me know, okay?
Yeah.
We'll use this as a case study, all right?
Yeah. Okay. So, listen, I'll do a crossing. Note there.
And then when it does, we can basically talk about it because then we'll have the fundamentals and the technicals aligning. Because I do think it's very cheap for a high quality stock.
Yeah. I mean, even there, so it's done there, and that support rose up, got down, then it dropped down again, and now that support there is obviously a little bit of resistance. So even given above that level, 68, which is not far off, that's nice. If it closes above that, that's quite a nice sign because it's not going any lower. Then it needs to just make its way up a bit more. You know, coming out like mid-cap, but wise, and again, sold off, no debt, a bit of a darling, Team 17, which is a gaming company. Mm. They came up with look where they've come from. Debbie Beswick, who's their sort of CEO, stepped down a while back, but nevertheless, it's a very good company and very one of a. I mean, I can bring up this spreadsheet of the fundamentals, but again, that's just been sold off massively. All gaming companies have, and yet they come up with a trading update, and I was looking at the support there. The trading update came out, it was in line with expectations, broke down again. I thought, well, there we are, just getting cheaper. So that's why I quite like looking at charts. I mean, fundamentally, I'll keep an eye on it. And then if it goes down further, I don't know how to start it. Well, it's just getting cheaper. It's fine. I don't mind that, you know? So, but Team 17, worth looking at. It's a quality company. And again, you get lots of companies just sold off.
Yeah, one thing about all, and I don't know whether it's appropriate for Team 17, one thing about all sort of like video publishers and developers that people should be aware of, there's two things, okay?
Yeah.
Clearly, they had their sort of like, you know, day in the sun during the lockdown when people just wanted gaming, okay? And now they're not gaming as much. But also the big sort of platforms that they get revenue from for selling their games through, Google, Microsoft, Apple, are now taking a bigger slunk of the royalties of that percentage sales value of those, you know, basically those publishers. So the economics are shifting more towards the platforms that sell it. And also what you're getting is such that you've had a huge supply injection of new content, new video games has reduced. In fact, it's that classic, you've got massive supply of video games and less actual demand. So the cost of buying a video game or playing a video game is a lot less than it was during the lockdown. Yeah. So you have got some of the fundamentals for you can see why the fundamentals for the video game industry are actually challenged at the moment because there's a huge supply, less demand, and more royalties being taken by the platforms to sell it on to users.
Yeah, I mean, so the results, this is my spreadsheet of the results, essentially. This side here, I mean, the market cap, you know, 45 million of cash, no debt, pretty much. Operating cash flow, 27 million. The growth-wise, you know, top line, 31. But, you know, operating profit went down by 30%, net profit went down. Mm. But value, sales, PE, you know, EV, EBITDA, 11. But nevertheless, healthy-wise, you know, and cash went down a little bit, net cash, that. But momentum's good. The broker forecasts are good. Again, the only thing that's wrong is momentum here, pretty much. I mean, there is worry about the gaming sector, but as within the gaming sector, it's a very healthy company worth looking at.
Yes, it is. I agree. You know, it is. Yeah. You've chosen a good one there. You've chosen top-notch business. I totally get it.
Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, do the same for that, for both learning tech and for Team 17.
Marvellous stuff. Thanks very much for that, Paulie. And I did say I was going to talk about a new stock. I will in 2 weeks' time. It's a bit more time, but I'm so excited about it. literally, it's small, it's got scale, it's got something special, and it's operating in very big, you know, money-filled markets with, you know, huge, in fact, the biggest customers with deepest pockets. And it's got something very special, I think. But I'll talk about that in 2 weeks' time.
Wow, yeah, I look forward to it. Yeah. All right, thanks very much.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.